Welcome to Flipper Talks, a family law podcast. We are Flipper, the Family Law Practitioners Association of Queensland. Family law is a wonderfully rewarding career, but is not without its challenges. Join us as we explore the issues that impact on the practice and well-being of family law practitioners. We hope our episodes will not only inform and inspire you, but encourage you to reach your potential. Enjoy this episode.
Welcome to Flipper Talks, a family law podcast. I'm Emily Owensworth.
And I'm Jack Shaw.
And today we are bringing you an exclusive look into the role of an associate in the Federal Circuit and Family Court of Australia. In this episode, we are joined by the associate to the Honourable Justice Bowman, Amy Farrigo. Amy is an experienced associate, having been with the court for 14 years. During her tenure, she has had the privilege of working with a number of judicial officers, including His Honour Judge Coates and Her Honour Judge Purdon Sully. Being an associate to a Division 1 judge, Amy works behind the scenes to support His Honour not only in some of the most complex and emotionally charged matters in family law, but also in His Honour's role of case management judge for Queensland for both divisions of the court. Today, we will be discussing what it's really like to be an associate, the day-to-day responsibilities, the challenges, and the rewarding aspects of the role. Plus, we'll get Amy's insights on how lawyers can make an associate's job easier and ensure smoother court proceedings. Whether you're a law student, a practitioner, or just curious about the inner workings of the court, this is an episode you won't want to miss. Let's get started. Welcome, Amy.
Thank you. Long-time listener, first-time caller, guys.
It's a pleasure to have you on.
No, it's my pleasure.
So can you tell us a bit about yourself? Who is Amy?
Well, thanks for the great introduction. My name's Amy Farrigo. I am an associate to Justice Bowman in Division 1 of the Federal Circuit and Family Court of Australia. I've been with the court for 14 years now, and I've worked with His Honour 10 years in October is our anniversary. It's marked in the calendars.
That's amazing.
I became an associate, 14 years ago, like I said. I have been in private client work since I got out of school. So I graduated high school in December 2005. And I didn't know what I was going to do, wanted to do interior decorating, and that didn't happen. And then I nailed a mailroom junior role at a firm called Nicol Robinson Hallett's, which is no longer around. So I started in the mailroom, did all the bottom feeder, law clerk
work.
We've
all been there.
Yep.
Then they trained me as a legal secretary, and I worked in all the private client work. So they trained me in wills and estates, class actions, personal injuries, and family law. So then I was with them for, I think, about 5 years, and then I moved on to Hemming and Hart. And at that time, they were just getting back their family law team. I didn't think they had one, and one of the solicitors at Nick Robinson Hallett's was starting up that family law division again at Hemming and Hart, and she took me with her. So there was a team of us that went there. And then I stuck around for about, 15 to 18 months. And I felt that I just sort of outgrown the legal assistant role. Training other assistants, and I thought I'd sort of reached where I could progress. So then a career opportunity came up through one of the solicitors was getting, I think, it might have been a Flipper email actually, about, here's, career opportunities at the court. And they said, how about you apply for a deputy associate role? And I went, I'm not studying, so I can't apply. And so I applied for a client officer role, and they interviewed me, and I interviewed poorly. Thanks for that feedback. but despite me interviewing poorly, the person who was interviewing me, they ran out after me and said, is there a reason why you didn't apply for the deputy role? I said, I'm not studying. They said, that's no impediment to applying, so could you please apply? I said, okay. So I applied. I didn't have to re-interview again, but then the next time I walked into the court building was to meet with good old Judge Steve Coates, and the rest was history. He basically hired me on the spot, went in to experience a duty list to see, I think it was a, let's see what you think about this. So then went there and I was mortified about the number of matters that he had in his list that day. But, yeah, I came back for a second day and I've been there ever since. And
the rest is history.
The rest is history.
And I think it's amazing that you've been there for 10 years because...
Actually, Jack, it's
14.
Oh, my God.
And I think, like, people have this view of associates from what the state court is, that people are only associates for a year. There's the whole interview process and recruitment process, whereas the federal court, FCFCOA, is completely different. Like, a lot of the associates, and from my experience when I was there, had been there for 5, 10, 15 years. And I don't think a lot of people know that. And it's a, I think it's a really great experience being there for that amount of time.
Yeah.
Because you just learn so much. And I don't think a year is long enough.
No, I agree.
Yeah, it's amazing.
You'd be an invaluable asset to the court, though.
Oh, it depends who you ask.
With all that knowledge, though, all those years.
Yeah, I'd like to think I've picked up a few things over the years. Yeah.
Love it. So are you currently studying then? Do you want to become a lawyer? What's your...
Yes, I am studying. So I was late to start studying. I was in my late 20s. So I was with Judge... I'll go back to... how I got into studying. So I was with Judge Coates for about a year, I think, and then I went to, I was his deputy associate, and then I stepped up as associate to Judge Purdon Sully. And so I was with Her Honour for 3 years. And then she had always encouraged me to study, and then she told me about how the Honourable Justice Kiefel came to become a High Court judge. And so that was really inspiring. And it really was a motivator that someone as prestigious as Judge Purdon Sully was saying, you should do it, you're capable. So that gave me a bit more confidence. And then an opportunity came up in Justice Bowman's chambers, or he was Federal Magistrate Bowman at the time.
Way back.
So, yeah. We've been through all them, all the courts. And so I worked with him, and... as most people would know, in the Federal Magistrates Court, Federal Circuit Court, the workload was massive. So I gave everything each day. There was nothing left in the tank for study at the end of a work day. So I just didn't have the capacity, although I did have the desire to study law. But then Justice Bowman, he got elevated to the Family Court, as it was then known, and he said, right, Ames, no more excuses, let's go. You've got to start studying now. I said, oh, okay, and so I did, and that was, I think, I don't know, mid-2017 or I think it was 2018 when he got elevated. So that's how I know when I started studying, and so it's been a long haul. I'm still there, but I'm on track to graduate at the end of this year.
Oh.
And hopefully get admitted in February next year.
That's so exciting. Oh, yes. And studying law is such a long haul, and I'm sure everyone who's listening knows that. But it's amazing hearing your career progression, how it's occurred, because I think everyone has such a different pathway. And it's so exciting hearing, you know, you started working wills and that commercial field, and now you've fallen into this family law career that's clearly going to be amazing for you. And even when you speak to a lot of senior practitioners, them telling you how their career path started to where it is now, it's just, I think it's really inspirational.
Everyone has their own story.
100%, yeah.
They all get to the same end goal.
So how are you going with studying? You're studying full-time?
I study part-time.
Part-time. And how do you go with that and working full-time at the court? Is it hard to balance? Is it a lot of work outside of work hours?
It's a constant struggle.
Yeah.
It's a real balancing act. I only do two subjects, and that is more than enough for me. I think if I did three, I would not pass subjects. Yeah. So I just have to be very selective about where I inject my energy.
Yeah.
And I am comfortable knowing that I can't go to every social event on the calendar.
Yeah.
And some things have to
Something has to give.
Something has to give. Yep. For example, I'm not able to attend a friend's wedding. Not, it's my partner's friend's wedding, so I don't really care that much. But it's still, I'm not able to attend because I have an in-person exam.
Yeah.
Not those good old online exams that they've had for the last couple of years. So, yeah, but the court has given me a lot of flexibility, and so has His Honour. And having, you know, I've been there for so long, that comes with a level of give and take.
Yeah.
They know I'm hardworking, so they're more lenient towards, okay, well, she needs a week off to prepare an assignment or attend an exam. So, and the court also has a study assistance policy. So as a permanent employee, I'm eligible for study assistance for like study leave hours.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really helpful. That's, you know, a little bit.
That's a really good incentive as well. Yeah.
Do most associates study, do you find?
Excuse me. At the moment in Brisbane, we have a lot of deputy and legal associates mm-hmm. who are obviously studying or have been admitted or are doing their PLT.
Yeah.
But there are some other associates who have been with the court for many years and have no desire to study law, or they could be studying psychology, for example. We've got one associate who's studying that. But, yeah, not everyone's studying and not everyone has to.
And you're saying associate and then you're saying deputy and legal associate. Can you, I mean, because some people probably don't understand the difference. What's the difference between associate and then deputy / legal associate? Is there a massive difference? Or?
Well, here we go. There's a lot of different nuances. So firstly, the associate is an administrative role mm-hmm. mainly.
Yep.
You, in the job description, you will find that they do not require to have, they're not required to either be studying or have a law degree. Now that is, when I'm talking about associates, deputy associates and legal associates, I'm only talking about providing judges with those associates. Yep. These are not associate roles for the judicial registrars or the senior judicial registrars.
Yep.
They are a different kettle of fish, which I can touch on if you want to, but that's not, I've never worked in that space. I've only worked for judges.
Mm-hmm.
So the associate only, that is sort of, I like to describe it to people that's who you have to get through to get to the judge.
Yeah.
And that's a highly administrative role. You probably spend 95% of your day in chambers.
Yep.
Responding to emails, preparing all of the files and His Honour and the deputy or legal associate for everything that's about to happen in court. Mm-hmm. And it also involves just the everyday running of chambers. The deputy associate, which is a role only in Division 2, you do not have to be studying law or be legally qualified. That is not in the job description. And I should probably touch on the difference between associate, the different roles that are expected. So I said the associate spends 95% of their time in chambers. With a deputy and a legal associate, their roles are very similar. They will spend probably 85% of their days in the courtroom with the judge.
So the deputy / legal associate is the one that we usually see in court?
Yes.
The judge, yeah, right.
Yeah, obviously that's not the same model for every chambers. I do know some chambers where it's the judge's preference that the associate goes down to court, but I can comfortably say across the board, most of the time the model is the associate takes care of things upstairs in chambers and the deputy or the legal associate is ensuring the courtroom's running smoothly, taking down the orders that are pronounced in court, and more so in my experience in Division 1, the legal associates are listening more to the evidence and the judge has already given them a task saying, I'm going to want you to assist me in summarising the evidence of, say, the family report writer.
Yeah, okay.
So the legal associate might go, okay, we've just got the report writer in, I'm going to take more notes because judge and I will want to, she or he will want to discuss their evidence with me later.
Yeah. That's so interesting hearing the differences and how everyone thinks that the associate is just this one body or entity.
I am that person that thought that, yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's a great breakdown.
Well, I guess I think we're so used to, and I'm bringing it back to the state courts, but we're so used to knowing an associate role is just that one singular person. Like I said before, you have that 1 year stint, there's that 1 year, there's the year out, you do the application process. And I don't think a lot of people understand the quite drastic difference that we have in the FCFCOA, which is kind of exciting. But just touching on the state court, so I think I would like to say most people know the application process for that. You apply a year out before your potential tenure with a judge. What's the application process for being an associate with the FCFCOA?
So it is very different to the state courts.
Yep.
It is an application process via an online submission. So you make an application through either the court's website or the APS jobs. So when an available associate position comes up, the court advertises that on its careers page of the website. Also on the APS jobs website, seek.com, and sometimes LinkedIn, you'll see it.
Yeah.
We don't just really get people. I know in the state court, they'll, you know, applicants will send their resume in a year advance and say, "Hi, I'd like to be considered. Can you send it to the judge?" That really doesn't happen. We're a government organisation and we've got some APS codes and conduct that we need to abide by. So there's a full application process.
You've told us about the different roles between associate and deputy associate. Your role as an associate to His Honour, what does your day look like? When you get in, how does your day progress?
So we're early birds in our chambers. So, you know, obviously you turn your computer on, you get a coffee.
I hope you did those two things. Yeah, they're the most two important things to start your day.
No, so obviously you're checking your emails and usually there's a late request for an admin adjournment or a phone request or... what time will it be in my registry if it's at 9:30 in your registry and I'm in a different state? And we're checking the portal for the material that's been filed at midnight that someone wants to rely upon. So it's firstly looking at what is in court that day and is there any further material that the parties have filed that I need to get to His Honour, because he will read that obviously before he walks into the courtroom. Then I'm making sure that I'm supervising the work of my legal associate, and obviously if I was in Division 2, it would be my deputy associate. Before His Honour and the legal associate go to court, I'm making sure that they are equipped with everything that they need in order to make sure the courtroom runs smoothly. As soon as court starts, my job is sort of, I've taken a back seat, and now the deputy or the legal associate, they're in charge of making sure the courtroom is running efficiently down there. Obviously His Honour's in charge of the courtroom, but they're also in charge of making sure people are coming in and out. Then I'm in chambers either typing or assisting His Honour in the preparation of a judgment. I'm proofreading orders that have been drafted. I'm granting subpoena leave in our document management system. I'm booking conferences, travel.
So never a dull moment.
Never a dull moment. And in our chambers, it's a little bit different to the operation of all the other chambers because His Honour is the case management judge for the whole of Queensland for both divisions. So I don't typically do a lot of work on files. I leave that to my legal associate because I'm really assisting His Honour in the case management role of trying to put out any fires that other judges might have in the registry.
Can you give examples of what those fires are? You don't have to.
Well, some judges will come and say, "I've got a double listed matter. Both of them are quite urgent. One of them, only one can run at a time, right? Is there anyone else that can help me? Or can we adjourn it? Bumping the desk. That was a no-no. I was warned."
Keep those hands to yourself.
Okay, I need a restraint. So I'm trying to find a solution for them where are there gaps in Brisbane for another judge to perhaps hear that matter that day or soon. We have visiting judges from the north, so Judge Demack in Rockhampton, Judge Bowery in Townsville, and Judge Cope in Cairns. They come and sit in Brisbane, so sometimes I can be able to transfer that other matter that's unable to be heard one day to a visiting judge. And I don't just plonk something in a diary. I actually look at the diaries holistically and go, where could we squeeze things in or move something or condense someone's day? They might have, you know, say two matters each morning across the week. Can we condense that into one day so then we can open up the rest of the four days of the week? So I'm constantly strategically planning and spotting, filling in spots.
You'd be good at Tetris.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun. I think it's really insightful, like, you explaining all of that, because I feel like a lot of people don't don't understand that that's part of your role. I think people just think, you know, associates sit in court and take down notes and...
Yeah, I think there is this perception out there and that the associate is literally sitting at the desk watching, like, Bold and the Beautiful, the witness in the witness box and counsel cross-examining. No, basically as soon as His Honour walks into the courtroom and we write down the time that it starts, we've clocked out almost. We always have one ear listening, and this is a skill that takes a long time to master, because usually people can only listen to one thing at a time, right?
Mm.
But when you're an associate and you're sitting in court, you develop this unique skill where you can be listening to the courtroom to key words like, Madam Associate, oh, that's me. And
I want to tend, can I tend to that?
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's when our ears prick up and go, oh, that's me, I better get up, or I'm listening. But all the rest of the time we are working on other matters. So we are, for example, if it was me, I'd be typing a handwritten judgment that my judge is old school. We do not operate the computer. He is a paper and pen guy. So he handwrites all of his judgments. So I will
still scan. To this day.
Right now, I just typed one yesterday.
That's crazy. Hey.
Handwrites them on a foolscap piece of paper in running writing. So
you can read his running writing now?
Jeez, you'd have, yeah.
Yeah. He said, oh, the most difficult thing about me is reading my writing, right? And I went, sure. So, when I'm down in court, we're working on other things. I'm typing judgments. I'm responding to emails. I'm preparing the exhibit lists. Granting requests to appear by phone. I'm drawing up court lists. I'm drawing up court orders. I'm speaking to someone in the Chief's Chambers in Melbourne about a presentation. You know, there's other things going on always at the same time, whereas I think in the state court, that's not that high workflow as much as in the family law divisions.
From what you've been saying, it sounds as though your role is mainly administrative, as you said. So in terms of the legal associate's role, the deputy associate's role, they mainly stick to legal research, or do you ever have a part of your day where you're doing any of that?
I do that as well, because
it is part of your role.
His Honour has the luxury of me studying law as well. Mm. So some tasks he'll say, Ames, can you do this part? Can you help me with that part? And our legal associate, Sophie will do this aspect or a different type of task, depending on what other work we have on. Some chambers, the judge will absolutely never ask their associate to conduct any type of legal research, because that's the boundary they've put in place.
Mm-hmm.
They have said, no, that's not what I hired that person for. That is what the legal associate's role mm-hmm. is for. Before I even started studying, though, I had been conducting legal research.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You don't need a law degree.
Great to, yeah.
Sorry, guys. Sorry to break it to you. You're not that special. Yeah. We are not that special. You don't need a law degree to conduct. And the court provides absolutely all of the training that you need.
Yeah.
And if your judge asks you, and you're just in an administrative role, hey, can you, you know, look up this case? Just ask a colleague if you don't know how. Ask our library team. We've got all the resources.
Yeah. So aside from every day turning computer on, getting your coffee and doing
most
your emails.
Things,
the most important things. Every day is a bit different, do you find then? Sort of a mishmash? Or do you find you still have the same structure each day?
I do, because
you're like a well-oiled machine.
Yeah, we are a well-oiled machine.
Yeah.
When His Honour was the National Case Management Judge in the Federal Circuit Court, that was a different kettle of fish every day, because there's different judges all around the country that you just don't know what they're going to spring on you.
Yeah,
putting out fires. But generally every day is the same, although His Honour, I could think that, great, I'm going to work on this case summary today. And then he says, no.
You are not.
No, we're not doing that today. Here's a 50-page judgment I've written. Let's deliver it tomorrow.
I mean,
And this is one of the other skills that you really need to learn in the court. Well, not that you need to, but you do, is that you've got to ride the wave and things can just be thrown at you. So you've got to be able to just pivot and go, okay, great, this is what I'm doing today. Oh, no, not doing that today. Great, just move on.
No, sounds like there's never a dull moment. And I think that's so exciting to think that you're just busy, 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 go, go, go. And I mean, I guess that does get exhausting. But I think it sounds, for the most part, it's quite an exciting role.
I love it.
Yeah.
Because I've been there so long, people say, oh, I get sick of it. I said, no, I'm still here. Like, some people will obviously outgrow their roles and maybe I've just got, you know, I'm a, what is it? Marathon runner, not a sprinter. But if I won $1 billion tonight, I would still rock up at work the next day because I actually really, really enjoy it.
Yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. That says a lot about your... Yeah.
I mean, but that could come down to the team. In my chambers, I am so lucky to work with who I work with, and especially the whole registry. Brisbane, our Queensland registries, our registries in the north, the staff are so great. Mm. We've got a really good cohort. So, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be a hard role to leave.
Yeah. Mm. Big shoes to fill too.
Yeah, massive shoes to fill.
Just joking.
So you were just chatting about how much you love your role as an associate, and I can definitely agree. When I was an associate, it was probably one of the best jobs I've ever had. On the flip side of that, what are some of the challenges and the struggles that you've had in that role?
A couple. On a day-to-day basis, day-to-day life, it's the competing priorities.
Yeah.
Because you have the expectation of your judge.
Mm-hmm.
You are monitoring your deputy or your legal associate. And even to flip that, as I've been a deputy associate, you also have the expectations of your judge, but you have the expectations of your associate who is monitoring your work, not in a micromanagement way, but, okay, well, I've got to get through this because they might need to give me something. I need to support them as well.
Just quickly, is it each associate and then deputy associate or legal associate, depending on what division you're in.
Mm-hmm.
Is it always the case that the associate's like sort of above the...
Yes.
And they... Okay, so they kind
and,
of...
And there's a...
with grading. Every judge.
Yes, yeah, okay. Every judge. So every judge has an associate.
Yes.
And every judge has a deputy or a legal associate, depending on the division.
And it's like one below.
Yes.
So like following on from that then, I guess, is what can lawyers do to help make associates' lives easier? I mean, given it... From what you said, it's quite a hectic role.
It is hectic. But do you want me to also finish off the previous question about the challenges?
Oh, yeah.
I cut you off. Sorry.
No,
we're getting too excited.
because I think it's really important to people think, oh, an associateship, they'll look so great on my resume.
Yeah.
And they use it as a stepping stone. Fair, you know, good, bad or indifferent, whatever, it is what it is. But people need to be aware that when they are trying to get into family law, they need to also have some insight into their own barriers as to what they can mentally take in.
Yeah.
Because the subject matter of family law can be really draining and traumatizing.
Mm.
The court, you know, the business talks to us about the vicarious trauma that we can all be subject to, and different people have different thresholds. So there is that mental drain of the subject matter that we're exposed to. We see some really sad and visually distressing cases, and some of them still can go on to haunt you. I've had a matter in our docket before where there was a parent who was a primary carer for many years, and His Honour was reserved, she was still the primary carer, and then the matter was relisted urgently because the mother had some sort of mental health incident, and the children subsequently, this is a very long story short, the children ended up, their residence was changed to the other parent, and despite the ICL and the court's best efforts to get this primary parent to re-engage in the process, we never heard from her again. I don't know whatever happened to her. And so this was a matter that was, this matter was finalised years ago, and I still remember it. I remember the name of the matter name, and I didn't get that closure. Some people, this will be like, oh, whatever, who cares? But these are the types of things that keep me up at night sometimes, the fact that I'd still think about, what happened to her?
Mm.
And what do these children think of what happened
to their
parents?
Some matters stick with you, hey?
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. I think you don't have the benefit. I mean, being at a firm, if there's a matter like that that comes into the firm and it's given to you and it's not something you really feel comfortable working on, there's an array of other solicitors or you know, associates or the like who can take on that matter for you. But being an associate to a judge, you're kind of just, you have to do it because
Actually, I disagree.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because there is that aspect of you think, oh, it's just me. I can't let the team down.
Yeah.
But no, we are collegial and we all know that what I can handle might not be what the next person, the person next to me can handle. Like, for example, for me, I was in the personal injuries class actions team as an assistant. I was listening to the victims' statements, and they were abuse victims from like a children's home. So they were historic. That was a big class action. So when I was still, I think I might have still been 17 because I was later in the year, or 18. Anyway, so my threshold, I think, for absorbing really traumatic stories is a lot higher than others. And there is an associate to a judge who has been with the court for a long time, and she worked for judges who predominantly did family law and then some general federal law. And she'd been in family law for a long time, and she had the courage to say, I can't sit in family law anymore. She was a deputy associate, so she was in court all day, every day, hearing really sad family law matters. And she said, can someone tap out for me? I actually can't. I can't do it today. I don't know if I'll be able to do it tomorrow. And the court said, fair, because they understand that we're suffering vicarious trauma. And she just reached that threshold that I can't do it. And no one judged her. Everyone's like, fair, we will help and assist you. In the past 12 months, there was a senior digital registrar's associate who they had this horrific matter. There were annexures to an affidavit with what I would call a crime scene, really visual, and that sort of tipped her over the edge and said, she said to her team leader, I can't do it. I've seen some of the material. I don't want to listen to it. Can someone else sub in? And so another associate, not in the registrar world, but another judge's associate, an experienced one who'd been around for a while, said, I'll sit in. I'll be fine. And so we help each other like that. We can tap in. And the court has an employee assistance program where you can call them up and they will provide the business, like the court funds, some counselling sessions. And you don't have to talk about work. That you can talk about anything that you might be struggling with. So that's available to us as well.
Yeah, it's really great that all the associates are super collegiate by the sounds of it. So we've discussed all of your career progression and life at the court. How do you think your role currently and your experience at the court is going to prepare you for transitioning to, I assume you're going to go into private practice when you are finished studying?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to specialise in family law. I cannot see myself doing anything else other than family law. Maybe some child protection work, because I feel that there might be a bit of crossover there that I might be able to handle. So obviously, I think it goes without saying how invaluable an associate position is in transitioning into being a solicitor, because you see more often bad advocacy than good advocacy. So you learn more of what not to do rather than what to do, because a lot of the good practitioners out there you don't really see at court because they're settling everything.
Yeah. And I guess you're in a really good position to debrief with His Honour afterwards to, like, I guess say, what did this person do well? What did they not do well? How would you have done it? And you get that advice at such an early stage in your career.
Yeah, absolutely. And when they say, what's the best thing about being with the court? And I obviously say family law work. I think any solicitor who gets into family law work, you only do it because you have this desire to help people. So that's what I get out of my job. But also the ability to get insight into the decision maker's head. Like, yes, you're seeing their judicial reasoning and you go, okay, well, I thought this about the evidence. And they say, actually, I don't get that from that evidence. So that's amazing. And you know, His Honour's currently reserved on an interim decision, and I prepared the case summary for that the other week, but I've been on leave when it was heard, and I had to ask him, I said, what do you reckon about that application? You reckon you're going to do this? He's like, yeah, yeah. I think to myself, great, I'm on the right track. I'm with him. So I think, I could probably do that job.
I'd be a judge now. Yeah.
Oh, that's good. So, you feel the longer you've been with His Honour, the more you've been able to kind of get into his head and understand what he's going to do before he does it, or kind of understand the approach that he's going to take with certain applications.
Most of the time, yeah, but sometimes he does surprise me. Yeah. After sure all these years.
Yeah. And with that, you obviously have seen what good lawyers are, bad lawyers are, what they do, what they don't do. Mm. Are there any tips you can give us to take into a courtroom or preparing and make your life easier? What are the hot tips?
Oh, well, this might sound really simplistic, but maybe comply with the trial directions. Okay. Comply with court orders.
Good.
Probably 101. Yes. Not sure what to do with that, Emily.
Yeah, I just thought that was 101, yeah. You know, Family Law 101.
It's actually so funny you say that because, now that I've been on both sides, and obviously you comply with court orders because court orders are court orders.
Jack's trying to find an excuse.
I am now on the other side, I am. But it is so hard sometimes because you are working with people who at the end of the day just aren't. It's not like we're in commercial litigation where everything is very structured and nothing really changes and you can quickly whip in and out an application in no time. Whereas in our area, you're dealing with people in their day-to-day lives, and I'm not saying don't comply with court orders. That's not what I'm saying. But there is now being on this side, I can see the difficulty sometimes because you are having to get those instructions, draft that affidavit, send it back to the client to make sure that they're happy with it and you've portrayed their instructions correctly, and then get further instructions. And, yeah, you should be doing obviously a while out. But I think I can appreciate now the sometimes difficulty. But that's not an excuse.
Jack's seeking some lenience.
Please.
It does depend on the type of people you're working with.
Absolutely.
If you have a difficult client, or even if the lawyer on the other side, if you're trying to do, you know, a joint balance sheet, and just trying to get them to send it back to you with their additions, it can be really difficult.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's fair. And I think most of the judicial officers can see where there are some firms or some practitioners where we can recognise, that's a bit odd. They're usually pretty good in getting things on time. And you go, okay, something must have been up, or we know enough about the file, so they probably have some difficulties getting some instructions. But there are firms and practitioners out there where they are consistently late in the filing of their material. Don't file at all, or send in late requests consistently. And that's where some frustration can come in, because, as you know, it's not their matter is not the only matter in our list. So when it's a consistent behaviour or consistent lack of complying, that's when you can get a bit frustrated.
And I guess at the end of the day as well, the judge, whichever judge it is, has made orders so that material is provided to the court and to them by a certain time so that they have the opportunity to read it appropriately before hearing any matter. And if, you know, we're not complying with those orders, then we're not complying with the judge's timeline to make sure that they're appropriately prepared, because at the end of the day, they have a job to do as well.
And I think that the profession would be mortified if the judge came in and said, well, I haven't read your material.
Yeah.
The clients and the profession want the judge to read the material. The judge makes the directions for the timeline for a reason. Some people might think, oh, that's just their standard directions. Yeah, they might have standard directions, but the timeline, it might have been very specific because that judge looked at their diary and said, oh, if they file it at 4 p.m. on this day, I know that I'm actually out of the country, or I'm sitting in another registry and my staff are actually not going to be with me. And for instance, with Justice Bowman, I need it printed and I'm not going to be in the same registry with my staff, so I need it printed elsewhere. Mm. So there's a reason behind – there's a method to the madness is what I'm saying. And I think that sort of is forgotten, that there's a reason why he ordered it to be filed on a certain time so that he could actually read the material and give as much value as he can to a family when it comes to their court event. And if you're filing it at 8:30 that morning, well, His Honour's actually already started court.
Yes, we've all seen his list. So that's your first tip. Any other tips?
Oh,
Emily and I are now taking notes.
I had a specific request from a compliance and readiness hearing chambers.
Okay.
Interesting. Well,
here we go. Oh, yeah, come on.
Please, I don't know, what is it? The certificate of I think they send an email or a certificate. Certificate of readiness.
Yeah.
Could the profession please send those in a week before, not the day of, because then the judge can't prepare.
Yeah.
So that was a specific question.
You've heard it here first on Flipper Talks, everyone.
Tip number two.
Yeah. File your certificate of readiness. Okay, so that's your last two tips? That's what you've given us?
And maybe think about when you're sending an email to Chambers, is this an email that perhaps could just go to the registry? You could call the National Inquiry Centre, mm-hmm. or is the email you're replying to have the information that you're seeking? Information you're seeking in a court order that's on the portal,
mm-hmm.
i.e.
problem solving before emailing Chambers. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And when you're communicating with Chambers, obviously not unilaterally, has to be joint correspondence or at least carbon copied to the other side. And, you know, professional, dear Madam Associate, or not emailing as though you're texting your friend.
Yeah, okay.
Keep it professional.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've had some emails that looks like they've just sent a text message to us. So that's not great.
So you've said that after once you complete your law degree, you could come on to be a solicitor. That's something you considering.
Yes.
Are there any other typical career paths that people do, or do you find most of them become solicitors, barristers, and sort of stay in the family law field?
Yeah, most of them do go on to practice
as
a solicitor first most of the time. However, we have had some associates, deputy associates, legal associates go straight to the bar. Mm-hmm. That's not very common. But we've also had people go, oh, absolutely not. I do not want to do family law. I thought I liked family law, but then I sat in family law and I do not want to do family law. So it's good that those people can recognise, that's actually not for me. But we've had a couple associates pivot into other government agencies. Two have previously gone into prison management. So they're still in some sort of government area. One who has recently gone into an investigative role with the Department of Child Welfare. I'm not going to try and remember their change of name they've had this month.
What is it? Families, Seniors, Disability Services and Child Safety. Remember that the other day because I had to use it.
Well, don't remember it too much. It'll probably change again. so she's pivoted into that, child protection area. Another one is doing, again, investigative role, but with investigating government officials' misconduct. So that's dealing with prison guards, things like that. So you don't have to go out and be a practicing solicitor. You can go elsewhere, and those other agencies really value an associateship being on resumes, I'm told.
Yeah. I guess you just learn so much. Well, as you've already said, you learn so much being an associate, and I think it just gives you an additional set of problem-solving skills.
Yeah, skills that you can take to many other jobs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, Amy, thank you for coming on the podcast today. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you here.
Thank you so much. Chit-chat all day in this little studio.
Put a microphone in front of us any day and we'll chat.
No, you provided some really helpful insights. I think anyone wanting to become an associate will find this episode very helpful.
Yeah, reach out if you have any questions. The court doors are always open. If anyone has any other questions, all the other associates on the floor, I'm sure, would be really happy to answer any queries people have when and where they're available. Don't ask them as soon as they're trying to open up the court door at 9:15. Just wait a couple of minutes. But yeah, thanks for having me. I'm so honoured.
We're honoured to have you.
Yeah, thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Flipper Talks, a family law podcast. We hope you enjoyed the podcast today. We confirm that the information we discussed today was just that, information for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not specific advice. If something discussed has you considering whether you should take steps, it is important to make sure you get professional advice about your unique situation before you proceed, whether that be legal, financial, accounting, medical, or other advice. Please reach out to Flipper if there's another topic you'd like explored, and if you know someone who might benefit from the show, remember to tell them about it. Thank you for listening.